C-167. Number 2A.
So, we take this big chart in front of us, just this one, so that we can work along a common text, namely that we started yesterday with the chapter on prayer, and I gave first an overall picture and atmosphere of the standpoint of prayer. That standpoint of prayer which says that really God is always at the point of perfection, and that we have to go out within our desires to see that we are one and become one with God's perfection, which is and which is unchangeable, and therefore is always at the point of perfection. Therefore, man's needs are always really already met. But that's only something that exists from the absolute standpoint, and we have to see that we are entertaining within our consciousness that absolute standpoint by bringing to that perfection all that those qualities within us that are divine. So that's prayer, to entertain, so to say, the divine qualities within us that can be at one, or in unity, or in union, or in agreement with the perfection of God. We have seen when we went through the chapter on prayer a few years ago that it is laid out in seven big main subjects. And each one of those seven main subjects give us, so to say, two factors. First, the factor what is necessary to entertain in our human consciousness in the way of spiritual divine qualities, so that then when we become one with God, that then that God works in us and gives us the reward. So what are or where are the subjects that we did find in the textbook? So in this chart, when we go down that vertical column, which has the title of chapter 1, Prayer, the Word as Word, and where we saw that the main epitome for the whole chapter could be reduced to saying that prayer is a spiritual understanding of God. That's the very first thing we have to see, that it is a spiritual understanding of God, not just a begging God to do something, which through unself-love, and here we get really those qualities which are no more selfish, egotistic, but which are really divine, that through unself-love brings us into unity with the perfect nature of God. So the accent there is in prayer. What is it that brings us into unity with the nature of God? As the very first subject we have seen in mind, and I read the epitome, and then I talk around it a little bit to remind what we had in the text. We read here that the prayer of true desire to know God as God is. That should be the desire, to know God as God is, not just the desire to find God the way we like him to be, but as God is, completely humanly objective. Then this brings us into unity. Now, what do we gain by this true approach in mind, namely the intelligent, active, all mind? So we can see we get into unity with that absolute nature of God as mind, which is all intelligence, which is the all activity of that intelligence of mind. We get only into unity with that through a true desire, that it must be the prayer of desire. What kind of desire? That says, I only want to know God as God actually is, and not as I have imagined him to be. And this is then the point where Mrs. Eddy explained what God is. It's interesting to see that right at the beginning she gives some kind of an indication already of the definition of God, because she already in the subtones of that main subject, she says, well, God is God is really mind, namely, he is intelligent. He knows already all. That God is substance because he rewards according to our motives. It's not in vain. It says that God as soul is unchangeable there. It says that God as principle is a science of harmony. And it says that in the subtone of life that God is life pouring forth already more than what we are able to accept. So it's no use to beg him for more. He already pours forth more than what we accept. And in the subtone of truth he says that that God does his work without being asked to do his work. So that it's shown that truth is self-working and bringing forth its own quality. He's already doing right. We don't have to advise him what to do, when to do something, and in which way to do something. He's already doing right. And finally, then, in the subtone of love, Mrs. Eddy shows that his work is done. And that gives us then the highest sense of God's perfection, that his work is already done. Now, this is a spiritual attitude, a spiritual atmosphere that we can entertain in our consciousness. And that naturally does away with all that which is suggesting the very opposite of this perfection of God. So this is one of the first main tone that would show us really what true desire would be. And here the second main tone shows now the prayer of reflecting the divine being. We come to a sense of spirit, namely of reflection, that divine being. In which way can we reflect it? Through the culturing of spiritual qualities, which brings us into unity with the unfoldment of spirit. Can you see the qualities that we have to bring in is those spiritual qualities? And it says, if you bring in those spiritual qualities, then something within you is in unity with spirit. And spirit then begins to unfold within you all that which needs to be unfolded. It brings as an answer of the prayer and the unfoldment of spirit within us. So again, we have a very good sense that we have to approach God rightly. And if we approach spirit rightly, then spirit is really experienced in our life as unfoldment of spirit. Here you know how she started out that whole subject by saying that the divine being must be reflected by man. And then we can ask ourselves, but how do we reflect that divine being? And then she gives all those spiritual qualities which are necessary to reflect the divine spirit. She speaks about those qualities of gratitude, of patience, of obedience, of meekness, of watchfulness, of obedience, devotion, love. You see, all these spiritual qualities must be nurtured within ourselves in order to be one with God who is spirit. Because God who is spirit is not gratitude, is not obedience. God who is spirit is not patient and meek. These are qualities in the human that have a touch with the divine. Those qualities in the human that can be brought into unity with the absolute, with the divine. So when we touch God as spirit, then spirit begins to unfold the divine qualities within us. That's answer prayer. The prayer that is answered is that the divine spirit can actually unfold itself within our lives. Now, she also naturally says that when we when we use these spiritual qualities, that is not always easy, that we may encounter a struggle. And so she would also show that it is a quality that we must struggle, really, to be always good, to strive to assimilate the divine character. Can you see there are qualities in the human that are appealed to and say, use them, use them, use them. It is not enough to ask. You must also strive for them. You must struggle for them. And then you are winning, really, the case. A lot of accent is put on the quality of gratitude, that you said if we are grateful for the good already received, we will receive more. You see, it unfolds within us, that the spiritual qualities, like gratitude for what we have received, has within itself the seed, really, to unfold more and more and more what we can receive. And then we remember that she really overforms that quality of being grateful for the good already received and said, but actually the highest gratitude is to be grateful for life, truth, and love. If we are not grateful for life, truth, and love, then we are insincere and incur the sharp censure the master pronounced on hypocrites, which means be careful that you don't build up a culture of consciousness that always says, I'm so grateful for this and I'm so grateful for that, and always mentioning the good received, so to say, the material good that we have received. She said that would perhaps tempt us to go along a more materialistic concept of God. Therefore, what we should be grateful is that such a thing exists, namely a God who is life, truth, and love. And that we should be grateful for that very fact, that we have a God who is always life and knows no death, who is always truth and knows no error, who is always love and knows no hate and decay and fear and jealousy and all these counterfeits of love. So in this way, she builds up a great sense that we culture the spiritual within us to the best we can. Therefore, also a great sense of worshipping spiritually and not worshipping in a ritualistic sense, that the ritualistic sense should be laid down, that our worship is really to stand in awe before the Adorable One and adore the fact that God is what he is. If we have that prayerful attitude within ourselves, then that has the power of spirit to unfold more and more the good there is. So we had two main qualities, namely to seek and to learn God as he is, and to desire to know him as he is. Then second, to reflect as much as we already can in the human those qualities which are divine, to use already those spiritual qualities which we can know. Everybody can know what meekness is, what humbleness is, what obedience is, what love is with a small L. Love is a small L. What devotion is. Everybody can know that. So one only has to muster those qualities and put them into action and into life. Then spirit will unfold these qualities more and more. The third main subject had quite a different attitude again. Soul is the next subject. We have here the prayer of sinlessness. And you hear at once, soul, which is sinless. So the prayer of sinlessness, fulfilling the Christ demand to rebuke sin. So the Christ demands of us that we see that we are sinless and that we remain sinless, which says, therefore you have to rebuke error, you have to rebuke sin, you have to rebuke the suggestions of mortal mind. That's the Christ demand, to rebuke sin. And that has as its effect what? That's answer prayer, namely that it brings us into unity with soul's ability to reform. So in the measure as we try to rebuke sin within us and does not let ourselves be fooled by temptations, then we strengthen within us the soul sense, and that soul sense is at one with soul itself, God as soul, and God as soul always has then that quality to reform us. Well, if something is reformed in us, that's answer prayer. So we see answer prayer is not to first to see that we are healthy and that we have a good job and that we earn more money and that this and that in the human is being settled. It is really, answer prayer is really to see that we are in unity at one with God, because then God has a chance to work within us. So that tone of rebuking sin comes out very strongly. We have there that sentence, "Get thee behind me, Satan." That's the rebuke. Get me behind me, Satan. Then the Christ demand to resist temptation, not to speculate with God that God may be merciful on me even if I do things wrong, and that he will not look upon this situation, and I speculate, well, after all, that's not so bad, and so on. It's not the scientific sense that is implied in such an attitude. So it is not to speculate with God. There is a great sense in it, not to speculate with God's goodness. Also, therefore, within ourselves, the willingness to be reformed, to let ourselves be reformed, to let ourselves be changed, and not to resist the change, so that we don't have a feeling, well, God should really answer my prayer so that it pleases me and it pleases my concept of a solution, but that it is really a sense here in prayer of soul that I'm willing to say, no matter what comes, I accept what God wants to do with me. Not my will be done, but thine will be done. You get a great sense of humility, of meekness. You hear the third beatitude of soul, that attitude of humility, of meekness. It demands naturally all our sincerity, again a sense of soul, our humility, our meekness. I said that already. This is a sense of soul that is necessary here, so that really, prayer has nothing to do with what? With the very counterfeit of soul, namely what one sees so often in prayer, emotionalism, ecstasy, that all these qualities come up and think if we sing a hymn as loud as we can and as often as we can, or if we do the rosary as often as we can, that can impress God. All our sensationalism, our ecstasy could impress God. Not at all. God is not moved by the breath, by the praise of, by our praise. He is not a human being that can be moved in an emotional way. So, therefore, what is necessary is to see that sober resolve of which he speaks, that he says, we have to bring to God, soul qualities. Only that answers prayer. And as an effect we have seen is what? That this brings actually a reformation. We come to the fourth prayer, and we read here the fourth main epitome. It is the prayer of obedience to God. At once you hear another attitude, when one knows a synonymous term, at once the subject of principle rings the bell and says, well, obedience, that has to do with principle. We have to obey the divine principle. And so it is the prayer of obedience to God. What does that imply? By which we bring everything in us into accord with God. See, now you have a definition of what is meant by obedience to God, namely a quality that brings everything within us into harmony or into one accord with God. We'll see that. And if we do that, that unites us with the impersonal workings of principle. So what we get back is therefore that impersonal working of principle, so that the principle can really work within us the way principle wants to work in us, and not the way we hope it would work in us, the way we give advice to principle how it should work out the situation. We are actually then really free from any personal sense, from any preconceived sense, and let principle operate within us the way principle wants to operate. This is a wonderful quality. Now, what is that obedience which brings everything in us into accord with principle? It has to do a lot also there with true honesty, with divine honesty, which says that everything within us should be geared to just to one thing, namely to be in accord with principle, so that words should be according to principle, that deeds should be according to principle, that motives should be according to principle, that aims and goals and desires are according to principle, so that our life is according to principle. You can see it is, so to say, saying every factor that constitutes our whole being must be channelized towards the one central point, towards the central issue, to be at one with principle. So that we have a principled attitude where words are not the opposites of our deeds, where our deeds are not the opposites of our inward life, where our inward life is not in opposition to our motives or to our aims in life. Can you see, everything that constitutes, so to say, our inner being must be channelized into one thing, into unity with principle. Then naturally, when everything within us has a central principle, then there is no discord, there is no friction within us. Then everything is at the state of harmony. Harmony is principle. And so this brings back to us really the workings of principle, and suddenly we begin to feel that spiritual power of principle working within us, so that we have a feeling our principled attitude is answer prayer, because it gives us spiritual power, and we feel within ourselves an authority of principle. Yes. Then we come to the next subject of life, which is a very interesting subject. Namely, first we read the epitome which we had at that time. Namely, the prayer of an understanding living devotion to God. You can see that it is a prayer that mobilizes within ourselves a living devotion to God, but based on understanding, not based on emotionalism, not based on religious rites or a religious sentiment, but it is an understanding, living devotion to God. And that devotion to God, she says, must be willing to sacrifice the mortal. Always at the point of life, we get that important point that we are willing to lay down our sense of life, our mortal sense of life, that we lay down not the mortal as such and jump over the bridge and kill ourselves, but that we give up the belief and the sense of mortal life. That must be overcome, so that understanding overcomes belief, and here we must be willing really to sacrifice the mortal. And then what do we get by it? That brings us into unity with the all-renewing life. So as an answer in prayer, we get the renewing life. What do we want more than that life is constantly renewed, is constantly exalted, is constantly lifted up, is constantly inspired by new ideas, with the freshness and newness of life. This is the answer to our prayer. We can see again, it is the answer is something that is furthering, so to say, our attitude towards God as he is. Now, this is a most important and interesting subject in the textbook, because she tells here something very necessary for us to understand. She starts out and says that petitions brings to mortals always the result of mortals' own faith. So she said, every mortal faith, every mortal belief has its effect. It is not so that only divine ideas have an effect. Every belief has its effect. If I believe in a certain thing, that certain thing can happen if I believe strong enough. So she it begins by saying, well, you can have a demonstration always, no matter what your consciousness is, what you believe in, that you will experience. It's always the same thing. Well, the measure, the form of consciousness which we have gives the form of experience we have. Therefore, that important question now, what kind of form of consciousness should we have so as to get a divine experience and not just a mortal experience? That's the important point here. And she refers also way back to the Bible and says, the Bible says, the prayer of faith shall save the sick, and gives there the most important hint and says, yes, the prayer of faith does heal the sick. Look, if you have faith in medicine and in drug, it can heal you. The stronger belief will heal the lesser belief and the weaker belief. That's absolutely possible. But that has nothing to do with Christian Science. Therefore, she says, we should not have just faith. We should have a deep-seated, deep-rooted understanding of God. Then that understanding of God will heal the sick, will bring forth the experience which are positive and are, in the long run, always positive. But then, naturally, she would ask, well, how can we do that? How can we exchange the belief in good to an understanding of good? So many metaphysical groups have a very good belief in good. They believe in good, and they train themselves mentally in the belief in good, and they get results. But these are results of belief and not results of understanding. They give us not a new life that is divine and eternal. They only give us a transitional change in the world of beliefs, but not in the world of God.